Hey everyone, welcome to the Army Hurwitz podcast show. Today I'm truly honored to have Maya Grossman as my guest. Maya is a high-performing, data-driven product marketing leader, having worked with and at places like SodaStream, Microsoft, and Google. She recently launched her book, Invaluable, which is a book designed to help you skyrocket your career. The book has been gaining great reviews and is hopefully helping many people advance in their careers. Maya, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Omri. It's a pleasure.
So I want to start a little bit with hearing about you and how your career shaped up to you eventually writing your own book.
So to be honest, earlier in my career, I wasn't much of a planner. I graduated from high school. I was enlisted to the Army like we all do in Israel. And when I was discharged, I had to figure out what I'm going to do with my life. So I traveled for a little bit, got back, and just took the first job that was available. And I spent 7 years doing that job. I was a travel agent, and I was, I had the opportunity to work for an amazing company with great people, but I wasn't necessarily following my passion. I wasn't thinking about a profession. I wasn't thinking about a career. I was thinking how I can pay my rent. And I think when I actually started my bachelor's, I majored in marketing and finance, hated finance, fell in love with marketing. I realized, hey, I can actually do marketing as a job. This can be what I do every single day and I can enjoy it. But then I had this problem. I spent 7 years doing something very different. How do you actually transition into marketing? So I started doing some research. I literally Googled, what does a job in marketing look like? And this was a while back, about 15 years ago. So there weren't that many options. You can be in communications, you can do Marcom, not that much. But at that time, something that was happening was social media. It was the first years of Facebook and Twitter, and it really got me excited. So I started reading about it, learning about it, and eventually actually opened up my own channels so that I can start practicing. But that wasn't enough because, to be honest, no one knew me and I didn't have anything to actually promote. So I went back to the travel agency and I said, hey, I think Facebook is going to be this great tool for you. I'm going to do it on my free time. Do you mind if I open a Facebook page and just, promote whatever it is we're doing? And, I was there for almost 7 years. They trusted me. They said, no problem, go do whatever you think is right. So for 6 months, I actually built a following on Facebook and learned how to use it and gained hands-on experience. And beside, actually kicking off my marketing career, it taught me something really important. I can create my own opportunities. If there's anything I want to learn, if there's any skill I want to gain, I can actually do it myself. And from that point forward, I actually started planning my career. And I decided to choose, different jobs that will actually give me the skills that I need to continuously move up. And I've done that for almost 15 years, made it all the way from an individual contributor to a VP of marketing in a fintech startup. And in the last couple of years, I've actually been doing consulting. So I've been helping other companies build their marketing teams from the ground up. And in that process, I actually got to mentor a lot of young professionals, giving them career advice. And that's when I realized, hey, more people can actually benefit from, learning how to get to where I got in my career. Maybe I should put it into a book. And this is how Invaluable was born.
So you talk in your book, you talk a lot about soft skills in comparison to hard skills. Can you elaborate on what soft skills is, what they are exactly? Why are they so valuable?
Yeah, so I think this is funny. There's actually research from about 100 years ago that shows that about 75% of your ability to succeed in your career relies on soft skills, not your profession, not your hard skills. And even though we've known that for more than 100 years, most of the focus when you're in college, when you're in school, is on gaining a profession. And when I realized that, and also when I looked at my career and I try to analyze what made me kind of skyrocket my own career, it wasn't you know, my ability to do marketing. Yeah, I learned how to do that and became very good at it. But at the early stages, it was more about my mindset. And I think that's kind of how I like to think about soft skills. They are the mindset. This is kind of the infrastructure that allows you to make the right decisions, that allows you to be more proactive and accountable. And I think at the end of the day, it what makes you an invaluable employee, because when you think about the world we live in today, and especially in marketing, everything changes so quickly. Whatever it is you learned in college, about 8 months after you graduate, it's going to be irrelevant. Job descriptions are going to change, software is going to change. And what doesn't change throughout this entire process is who you are and how you think and how you operate. And I think if you have that strong infrastructure, you're going to be able to future-proof your career no matter what happens in the industry.
So what are some of the base concepts of soft skills, if you can name a few?
Yeah, so what I talk about in the book is what I found to be the most important skills when you want to build a fulfilling career. And it starts with having an owner's mindset. And I think this is actually the basis for everything. Because if you can't understand your role within the company and why you should think like an owner, I don't think you're going to be able to actually apply all the other skills. So what does it mean to have an owner's mindset? I think sometimes when people hear that concept, they think, oh, I should work 24/7 for the company, but I'm not going to get the same compensation. But that's not actually what I'm aiming for. Having an owner's mindset means that you know how to see the bigger picture and the day-to-day. It means that you don't think about how to optimize for your own good. You think about how to optimize for what the company needs. That means sometimes you're going to step out of your job description. You're going to do things beyond your scope just because you know it's the right thing to do. It means that every decision that you make, you're going to make by how it actually impacts the bottom line, not how it benefits you. And I think the biggest challenge people have with this concept is that it requires delayed gratification. It means that you're not going to see the results now. You're going to put in a lot of work and effort, and it's going to take a couple of years until you see the results, but it's unbelievable how quickly you're going to move up once you actually adopt this mindset.
What happens if you work in a company that doesn't value, you know, your efforts? And I don't mean the professional efforts, but, you know, some companies, as we have, as I've seen in the tech industry, I'm sure you have seen, there are certain positions that are occupied for the long term, especially positions like VPs. Why would someone put his extra effort in doing stuff for the company not for his own sake, if in the end the VP marketing is going to be the same VP marketing, the CEO is going to be the same CEO? And
yeah, well, I guess it really depends on what you're trying to achieve. And if you work for a company and you can see your future there and you want to stay, you definitely need to make sure that you're going to have those opportunities. And I think in a way you can actually create your own opportunities. So maybe the VP of marketing is not going to move, but can you create a role that reports to the VP of marketing that doesn't exist right now, maybe, that's going to give you more responsibility, that's going to help you build the skills you need. So in 2 years, you can move to a different company and take on that VP role. And look, at the end of the day, we all work with people. And if the people around you do not appreciate what you do, sometimes it just means you're at the wrong company, and that's okay. It happens sometimes. But I think more often people just are so not used to other people doing more that they're kind of surprised and they kind of try to figure out what's your motive. But if you do it consistently, at least from my experience, most of the time your manager will learn to appreciate it and they will be happy to reward you for it.
Previously, you talked a little bit about how dynamic the marketing landscape is, the professional landscape is, especially in tech. Softwares change every Monday to Tuesday. And how do you see your book as a piece of evergreen content that can serve people in 10 years, in 15 years?
100%. And especially with everything going on in terms of automation and how jobs are changing, everything that is super simple that can be replicated is going to be outsourced. I think where most people are going to be focused on is roles where they're kind of integrators, where they have to bring people together. They need to look at the strategy. They need to understand the top level and the bottom line and constantly combine them. They're going to have to work across different disciplines. And I think soft skills is exactly what will allow you to do that. So there's actually probably no better way to future-proof your career.
I know you come from a very, we talked about it earlier, a very big marketing background, being VP of marketing, consulting to so many high-level companies like Google and such. I want to talk to you a little bit about the transition I'm seeing, the transition that I'm seeing in B2B marketing currently, people going from more lead generation-based approach to a more demand generation, more holistic type of marketing. What is your two cents on that?
Yeah, I think I probably always held this notion that, leads are not as important as actually creating demand. But I think it really depends on your definition of demand. And I know we both, really like the way that Chris Walker talks about demand generation. It's not about, forcing people into your funnel. It's about creating something that's so valuable, so interesting that people will raise their hand and come to you. So it's kind of pull versus push. And I think what most of us, if you do marketing very well, you want to have that pull. You don't want to focus on the push. It's okay to do it a little bit. It's okay to use it to, just spread the word, especially early on when no one knows you actually exist. But I think it really kind of shifts the focus into the wrong thing. And when you start focusing on leads, then you start optimizing for the wrong numbers. You think about, how many clicks and how many people you bring in the top of the funnel instead of focusing on the quality and how much it actually impacts the bottom line. And I've always been a huge advocate for brand because this is exactly what brand marketing does. It gets people to know your name, it gives them value, and it brings them to you instead of, the other way around. So yeah, I'm a huge fan of focusing on demand generation versus just bringing in leads.
How would you handle a CEO that demands leads from his marketing department ASAP and not really, and it would be, let's say, a hard type to convince that more money and more ad spend should be efforted to demand and brand?
Yeah, I think in general, when I face skepticism or when I have new ideas or I'm trying to focus on something that's more long-term, I try to find a way to demonstrate success very quickly. So instead of just telling people, I'm right, you're wrong, I will probably run two separate experiments. One of them, I'll continue bringing in leads. I'll show you what you want to see at the top of the funnel. On the other hand, I'll focus on the demand aspect of it, maybe run a couple of experiments where I have, ungated content or, I'll do more brand advertising. And, I'll wait for 2, 3 months, however my sales cycle is, to show results because you can't argue with results. So for me, that would probably be the approach. I mean, obviously, I'll, try to have that conversation. If it doesn't work, I'll just opt for showing instead of telling.
Let's get back a little bit to your book. How was the writing process like? I know you told me you've taken about 8 months off of working with clients, and you took that time to write. And how was that process like? What on the practical level? How do you write a book?
That's a very good question. It's kind of funny. You literally sit down, you open your laptop, and you start typing. That's pretty much it. And this is what I did initially. And I think in the first time I sat down, I probably wrote 2 chapters and I gave a few people a quick look and I showed it to my husband and he said, "Babe, I love you. This is bad." So I had to figure out, how to do it the right way. Like a good marketer, I reached out to my target audience and I asked for feedback. And I asked them, what are your biggest challenges in your career right now? And I didn't change the skills were the same skills, but I used their feedback to shape, you know, my writing into something that they will enjoy reading and they can understand. And I did it throughout the, you know, the writing process. Every couple of chapters, I would send it out, get feedback, kind of iterate and do it again. And some days are great. You know, you have an idea, you know what you want to talk about, you just write it down. And some days are horrible because you have absolutely no idea what you want to say. So you just kind of, you know, wait it out. But I think as a whole, it was a really, really interesting process. And it really helped me understand, even as a marketer, how to write better and how to create content that's engaging in a way that people just, you know, I see the reviews right now. People are just obsessed with the book and they really enjoy it.
How was the publishing process like? Did you work with an agency? Did you do the whole marketing aspect yourself?
Yeah, so I did everything myself and I self-published on Amazon. Again, very interesting process. Who knew that Amazon has this whole SEO aspect to it? And, you know, I had to figure out how to do keywords right on that specific platform and how the algorithm works. But also, you know, when I started writing, you know, I had some audience that knew I was a marketer, but I didn't really have a following in terms of career development. So I spent those 8 months writing, but I also spent them building a community on LinkedIn because, you know, if you build it, they will not come. You actually need an audience. And I started way before I had the book ready and just created, you know, content for who I assumed will be my main target audience, built that community. So when the book launched, you know, I didn't just, you know, throw it in the wilderness. I actually had people waiting for it and it got the traction it needed. It hit number one on Amazon on a couple of categories, which was my dream. So very happy that it happened.
What's next for you? Are you going to write another book? Are you going to go back to consulting, working with a specific company?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do next. I really enjoyed consulting, but I also love the full-time, you know, having that ownership, really seeing a company through and helping them grow. So I may go back to working full-time. We'll see. But I gave myself to the end of this year to really focus on the book. So I guess we'll have to wait and see.
I know while COVID was happening, you were writing your book. So you were not involved in the industry, maybe seeing what happens, but I know your husband is an entrepreneur, so you probably got some sense of taste of what's going on in the industry. How do you think COVID is shaping work culture? How is it shaping the industry? How is it shaping marketing industry right now?
Yeah, I can tell you that, well, you know, since I'm in San Francisco, what's happening in Silicon Valley, and it seemed like a lot of the company, especially the bigger companies, are going to move to being remote permanently. And I don't think they're going to take away offices completely. I think we're still going to need that personal aspect. I know I miss it. When I did consulting, I, you know, traveled a lot. I had a lot of meetings, got to work with different people. And the last couple of months, it was just me in front of a computer. And it's challenging. So I definitely think we're going to find some sort of mix. But I think the biggest impact is going to be on how companies think and how they plan for the future. Because right now, they had to figure things out very quickly. And I think we kind of jumped from where we were, you know, 10 months ago to where we were supposed to be in 10 years very, very quickly. So I think from this point forward, people are just going to focus on how do we make it work in a way that, you know, we get people engaged, but we, you know, it's a huge opportunity to reduce costs when you don't have an office. It's a lot of money to have, you know, a huge workspace for, you know, thousands of people. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. I think from, you know, my personal perspective, I would love to see a hybrid where, you know, I can choose when and how I want to work from home, but I have the opportunity to meet people in person. I do not want it to go away completely.
This question is maybe going to lead to your next book. If you had to give, let's say, three tips for people right now that are remote workers, employees, right? So what can they do, you know, not being in an office with anybody, not seeing their boss daily? What can they do to be invaluable and for their company, for their organization?
Yeah, there's definitely a challenge when you don't actually see people every single day. I think the most important thing, and the one that most people actually skip, is to decide what your communications with your manager actually look like. Some people just kind of wait for their manager to ask them, oh, so, you know, how are you doing? Where, you know, what are you working on? I actually prefer the more proactive approach. But if your manager has a couple of direct reports, then he has different people coming to him, different days, different channels. Maybe someone uses Slack, someone uses email. Go to your manager and just ask them, how often do you want to know what I'm doing? What's the preferred method? Do you want me to send an email with bullet points? Do you want me to update you on Slack when something happens? You know, tell me what you need so that you're very clear on what I'm doing at all times. I actually like to have a shared document that I update live every single day where, you know, you can see my progress on different tasks, just to give my manager, you know, a peace of mind. So I think that's a huge thing you can do. Another thing is to make sure that you have the opportunity to speak up and you have visibility. And I think especially if you're, you know, earlier in your career, people are a little bit scared to do that, but it makes a huge difference when people know your name and when you're able to, you know, deliver value just by having a different perspective. It doesn't mean you have to jump on every email that someone sends, be very strategic about it, but, you know, don't stay, you know, quietly in the dark and wait for something to happen, actually initiate. And I think the third thing would be to make sure that you still connect with people that are not directly in your team, because, you know, especially when you work for a big organization, cross-functional communications are important. And if you're not working on something right now, you know, you may have 2, 3, 5 months where you don't talk to other teams, and that's not great. You constantly want to network inside your organization. So reach out to people and just, you know, invite them for a fun coffee for 15 minutes and just have a nice, easygoing conversation. It doesn't have to be about work, but make sure you maintain that opportunity to network even when you're remote.
Great advice. Great piece of advice right there. I have two more questions for you, two last questions for you today. Number one is, you wrote a book right now. What type of books inspired you in the past?
Yeah, well, I actually, it's kind of funny, and I talk about it in the book. I stopped reading pretty much after I graduated from college. And if I did read anything, it was probably 50 Shades of Grey, nothing educational. I don't know why. It just felt like it was too cumbersome. I remembered business books as being boring and, you know, just something that didn't really contribute to the way that I enjoy learning. But when I worked for Microsoft, around the same time that I joined, Satya Nadella actually joined as the CEO. And he kept talking about this whole concept of a growth mindset. And I couldn't figure out what it was. And he kept talking about this book called Mindset by Carol Dweck. And inside of Microsoft, they actually shared it. They did an entire program about growth mindset. And I was like, okay, maybe I should give it, you know, a try. And I think that book changed everything. Mm-hmm. Not only my perception of myself and how much I can grow and learn, but I finally read a book that was so good, so interesting, so compelling that I couldn't stop reading it. And that's where I decided, okay, maybe I should give business books, you know, another chance. So I highly recommend Growth Mindset to everyone. Another book that made a huge impact on me was Radical Candor by Kim Scott. Anyone who wants to be a manager, I think it's probably the best leadership book I've ever read. And lastly, which is one of my favorites, but it has nothing to do with marketing or personal development per se. It's called Never Split the Difference. And it's essentially a book about negotiations, but it's so much more than that. I think I listened to it probably 2 or 3 times already. It's just a game changer. So I highly recommend that anyone try it out.
How do you handle stress?
I am very bad at handling stress. I usually just keep on going, you know, unless you faint, puke, or die, don't stop. This is Jillian Michaels, and, you know, it's right in sports, but it's also right in business. But no, in the last couple of years, I have been actively scheduling time to de-stress, to not think about work. During the weekend, I try not to have my phone with me at all. When I go out, I don't take my phone with me, and I just try to enjoy the moment. I don't try to, you know, upload everything to Instagram and document my life. I just want to enjoy what I have. It doesn't always work. Sometimes, you know, you have things that you really have to get done in time, but I really try. But it's an effort. I actually schedule time on my calendar to do it.
Awesome, Maya. Thanks a lot for your time. I'm sure the audience has enjoyed so many wonderful advice that can help their careers, that can help their marketing strategy. And thanks a lot.
Thank you.